The success of any organization is understanding it starts with the grassroots up. Bravery? Well, that just may be the key to fundraising. And if you can lead volunteers, you can lead anyone. I'm Tim Paul, and this is Leadership Strike Group. Welcome to LSG, the only daily podcast preparing Generation Y for a lifetime of success through leadership. I'm Tim Paul, and I dial it up 5 days a week, interviewing today's most accomplished young leaders, under 35 execs, and our brightest entrepreneurs. Transform into a bold leader, conquer your professional dreams, and leave your profound legacy of positive impact on the world around you. This is episode 6, so let's get nice. Today, I strike up a conversation with James Elsmore. James is the director of Solar Head of State, a nonprofit organization that works with world leaders to champion the use of solar energy. James co-founded Solar Head of State while studying for his undergraduate degree. He came from England to the United States on the Morehead Cain Scholarship, the oldest merit scholarship in the United States, which provided a full ride to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He now works full-time on Solar Head of State, which has partnered with a growing number of governments around the world. This month, he will head to Jamaica to install solar panels on the Jamaica House, the official residence of the Prime Minister. In 2017, he was listed on the Forbes 30 Under 30 list and in Richtopia's top 20 entrepreneurs under 25. James, welcome to Leadership Strike Group. To get started, enlighten me with some additional insight into your life story and how you arrived at where you are today.
Hi, thanks for having me. To give a basic introduction about me, I'm from a very rural background. I grew up on a farm in England and was the kind of person that's always been entrepreneurial, that kid that sold sweets in high school, and actually made £50 profit a day at some time just selling Haribo. I also started an events management company when I was 16 and worked on that throughout my last years of high school. For the past 4 years, I've been living in North Carolina. As you mentioned, I went on a scholarship to the United States, which was quite the adventure for me. I'd never been to the United States before that, so I turned up on my first day of college pretty much feeling like I was on a new planet, but a fantastic experience. I love to travel and love the sense of adventure, and obviously growing up, I've always had that interest in the outdoors and the environment, and also think that actually growing up on a farm and seeing my dad as an entrepreneur and being his own boss, that was very normal to me in a way that I really think I took for granted until recently. I also realized that farming was not for me, but a background that I really value, and have taken that interest in the environment to now be working on renewable energy, something I really love. My real interest came through climate change and the risks that developing countries are facing due to climate change. I work on this organization that you mentioned and I co-founded, called Solar Head of State. It's a nonprofit that's creating this global coalition of leaders, and we're really taking this worldwide, and something I'll talk about in a bit more detail later. Right now, my life is pretty remote based. Everything I do is online. My team are based worldwide, all online, a term that's sometimes called a digital nomad. Not sure I would always use that term for myself, but kind of sums up what I'm doing. This is a really good opportunity for travel, and when I'm working in a new place, I get a chance to go there, hang out for a couple of weeks maybe, work from there, and rather than a business trip where I have to fly in and fly out. So that's something I really value, being able to travel while also working on these projects.
A ton of great work going on over there at Solar Head of State. You guys are really on the cutting edge of global climate change innovation. But I do kind of want to take a step back here, James. I really want to look at how you put leadership into words. So essentially, how do you define leadership?
There's no one definition of leadership, but for me, I think the key of leadership is a willingness to learn, to adapt, ask for feedback, and make changes where necessary. And even the most experienced leader will be making mistakes. You're going to get things wrong, but you really need to learn from those mistakes and persevere and see every failure as an opportunity to learn. If you're in a big organization, there should be a system for this to work with your managers and get feedback. But even then, it's often top down. And I find that usually the best feedback comes from the people you're leading and should be grassroots up. if you're in a small organization like me, it's really difficult to evaluate yourself, and there may not be any system to give feedback, so there's really important there to be open with other people. I try and be as open as possible with the people on my team to make sure they know I'm always available for constructive criticism, and I try and offer that to make sure it's a two-way street. But again, something I'm eternally learning on, and I think that's the key.
A willingness to learn, adapt, ask for feedback, and straight group make changes when necessary. Something we touched on briefly in the last episode with Gloria Tavera, something that James is echoing early and often in this interview, which I just love. So James, at the age of 24, it's been a relatively brief career for you, but one that hasn't been short of success. You've had tremendous success in the Maldives, you've gone and done great work in St. Lucia, and now you expect to crush it later on this month in Jamaica. Now, we all have different things that work well for us. We all have different leadership styles. I'm curious to know what works well for you. What is your leadership style?
Being in a nonprofit, it's a very different world than probably what many of your listeners are used to in the for-profit sector. I work mostly with volunteers, and I think that's an opportunity because if you can lead volunteers, you can lead any team. It's a very different dynamic. They often have full-time jobs or full-time studies and are doing this on the side because it's extra experience and something that they like the idea of and want to support. And as a leader, it's your job to respect their time and their volunteers. I've been a volunteer too in these situations, and often I've been either micromanaged or left to completely do my own thing. And I think the key there is finding balance between those two things. You need to offer enough guidance, but not get too involved, and really give specific projects that people can go away and work on and have a chance to take their own initiative on. In my current situation with Solar Head Estate, when we were in the early stages, I took my own initiative on various projects to get them up and running. But I wish I'd mastered giving and receiving feedback earlier on, because communication really is the key here. And, you know, I'm only 24. I'm still very much learning by doing and trial by error. And I don't always get that right. So with volunteers and with, I'm sure this applies to leadership in general, really the key I've found is that communication, being able to inspire them and empower them and make sure they feel like they're able to offer a useful contribution to what's going on.
And there it is, the key to so many facets of our lives, which is communication lanes, keeping them open, keeping them two-way, and making sure that whether you're in a small, maybe flatter organization like James, or you're in a larger organization, they're paramount just the same. Now, you mentioned that you work a lot with volunteers, but at the same time, you work with for-profit companies, like the company that's donating the panels, installing the panels, some of the consulting firms. A lot of us in Generation Y are having to collaborate with different teams. So I'm curious to know, how do you bring those for-profit teams together, those companies together, to align with your mission?
Yeah, and I think a really interesting part of what we're doing is bringing together nonprofits, for-profit companies, and governments. And as you said, the process between any of those three different organizations can be quite different. You get the classic bureaucracy of government, which can often make things quite slow. For for-profits, generally there's a willingness to work quite quickly and be able to move much more quickly than we can in a nonprofit or the governments can. But because this is often seen as a side project for them and something that the staff get to do in, as a kind of extra in their spare time, sometimes it's not given the same priority. I mean, we really rely on pro bono and in-kind donations, and so we have to respect that. Obviously, the for-profit work comes first in any of those situations, and that can make different things a bit more difficult for us sometimes.
Yeah, you know, I think it's pretty easy to see how that could be challenging. I mean, really, the agility, that for-profit nature of these businesses that you're having to bring together is vastly different from the nonprofits, vastly different from the governments, the municipalities that you're working with. But dude, I mean, honestly, it's been incredible what you've been able to do in such a brief career. I think we all need to know that secret sauce, James. What is your secret? Has it been a skill that you've leaned on? Has it been a mentor that you've been in constant contact with that's been giving you all these secrets? What has been that one thing that has led to all of this success?
I'm really not afraid to ask for advice. In fact, I'd say for the first 2 years, maybe a large part of my time was spent calling people in different sectors. The model that we've formed now is quite unusual, much more rare than a kind of standard for-profit model of selling products or a consulting business. So it's taken a long time to adapt that and form that to the way we are now. And I spent a lot of time emailing people, talking to people, using Twitter and LinkedIn to reach out to different people. And I think the key message there is it's amazing how willing people are to give you their time and to share their thoughts with you. That's been a huge thing for me, and keeping those people that I've spoke to along the way involved from all different sectors has been fantastic. So I really enjoyed that, and I've come to appreciate how easy it is with the internet to find people of diverse skill sets, diverse geographical backgrounds, and utilize their skills.
Strike Group, you really need to view the internet as the great equalizer. It really has leveled the playing field for all of us. Knowledge, of course, is at the tip of our fingers. And of course, it's never been easier to reach out to somebody, especially somebody that you don't know, like James is talking about. I mean, for instance, I reached out to James on LinkedIn. I got 300 characters to introduce myself, tell him what I was all about, and tell him what I'm trying to do, and of course, why I would like him to be on the show. And he's like, yeah, let's rock and roll. Let's do it. So you really need to get out of your comfort zone here and say, hey, I'm not afraid to reach out. I'm not afraid to get in touch with people, because you'd really be surprised on who's willing to help. Now, James, you've had a lot of success. We've talked about a lot of that success. All right, let's flip the script. What is one thing you wish you would have mastered earlier in your career that contributes to your success today?
Well, actually, in my short so far career, I've been very lucky. As you said, we've been able to grow very quickly, had a lot of lucky breaks, and really had a lot of success. I'd say the biggest failure has been my ability to communicate our message and communicate what we're doing succinctly. I tend to get wrapped up in the minutiae and not be able to communicate the bigger picture. So for a while, we really struggled to do any form of fundraising. And I think the fundraising has been our biggest block for the last year and a half. And that's always the bane of any nonprofit. But communicating our message was a big problem there. And I think also just going out and being able to ask for money and allowing my team to be able to go out and ask for money. I have really learned in the past year how to fundraise and to not be afraid of asking for money, which you can't be if you're working in the nonprofit sector. But also in that, you have to be able to offer a return for someone, whether that's tangible or intangible, to show that their money is going somewhere useful.
Great leaders will understand ROI, return on investment. Whether somebody has donated you time, whether they have donated you money, you need to be able to repay them with time or with money, or it could even be simple psychological reciprocity. That's that social rule that says people should repay what another person has provided to them, even if it's just kindness. So that was my key takeaway, James. What is your key takeaway? You really zoned in on fundraising. So a lot of us in the Strike Group need to raise funds for different facets of our jobs, different facets of our lives. So I want to know, what is that key to fundraising?
I think a lot of the time I previously was reluctant to put myself out there and was just hoping that someone would turn up one day and write a nice check to get moving. And obviously that doesn't happen in the real world. You've got to be able to ask people. So part of it is creating a network of people that you can go to and ask. If you're talking about a big company, it's really difficult to find the right person. But with any perseverance, you can go and do that. So yeah, I think the bravery to go and ask.
Now, I kind of want to get into the belly of the beast here that is Solar Head of State. And I want to focus more on your young leaders. So what would separate, James, two equally qualified people apart, both that are looking to grow into your organization, grow with your organization, and grow into leaders at your organization?
Yeah, this is something I've been thinking about a lot, because we've had quite a high turnover of people coming through the organization, particularly the volunteers, as we don't have many paid positions right now. And the key thing that I've noticed in setting people apart is the ability to take initiative. And it's not always the people that you'd expect if you have an interview that are the ones that have the ability to take initiative. I still haven't devised a good way of being able to identify this in the early stages. But within a few weeks of working with someone, you can clearly see that some people are willing to go out of their way, propose new ideas, or take an idea and, you know, go with it, whereas other people wait for instructions on every minutiae. But I like to work with a team with ideas and instructions that are flowing in both directions. It's not just a top-down approach, and that really sets people apart if they're able to work effectively in that environment for me.
Yeah, that's really interesting that you bring that up. It actually reminds me of a quote from Simon Sinek, who said, "When we tell people to do their jobs, we get workers. When we trust people to get the job done, we get leaders." Now, that's something critical for our generation to remember, both on the leadership side and the followership side. So, Strike Group, what we need to do is sort of sanitize that tell me what to do attitude that some of our workers have. And I know you can imagine them. They're the ones that come in at 8 o'clock, their head's on straight. They're not doing anything wrong, but there isn't a lot of innovation. There isn't a ton of creation. There isn't a lot of ownership in their work. And they're kind of just following the checklist. And then they slip out of there at 5 o'clock, and we may not have even realized what their impact was because they do the same thing day in and day out. And we need to remember on the leadership side that if we empower our teams, empower our workers to be creative and innovative and instinctual with their work, oftentimes we're going to get a better product because of the ownership that's taken. And I know Solar Head of State has a very open, very innovative culture for disruptive thinking. James, I want to know, going along with that, does your business strategy align with your leadership strategy?
For our organization, our whole purpose of existence is to promote leadership within solar energy. And the principle being that actually the smallest countries are making the biggest commitments to renewable energy. A lot of these island countries in the Caribbean that you've mentioned have really high percentages of renewable energy that they want to get within the next few years. You have these island nations, sometimes 10,000 people with very few resources, that are actually making a big impact and using this, their commitments to solar energy, to make a global impact in an area where their voice might not have been heard before. So leading and changing the wider world's minds on the feasibility of renewables has been very possible for these small countries, just because you really need these trailblazers to go ahead and adopt a new technology before other people and the naysayers follow suit. Elon Musk has been a great example of this with his work in different islands, and in Samoa recently the Solar City did a big installation there, and he's been a real champion of that. And I'm a keen fan of the work of Elon Musk in this sector. You can take that example of trailblazers down to the individual level, that we need people to be brave and be the first to go and do something before the sheep might follow. And I think that works on the personal level as well. Within a company or within a sector, you need people to really be the first to go and try a new technology or try a new thing before the rest of the people follow. And if you can be the person to do that, then you're really setting yourself apart.
Well, we are going to set ourselves apart, James, in the rapid fire round. But before we go full tilt, I will give you the chance to strike. What is one thing you want to know about me?
I'm really interested to know what your biggest motivations for developing the series and having a focus on leadership are.
Yeah, my motivation for this project was actually grown organically by some of the statistics that I was starting to see about our generation. And it was actually quite troubling. Let me give you some of these stats, James. I'm going to come at you hard and fast. 34% of the total workforce is millennials, according to Pew Research Center. 31% of those people describe their current leadership program at their work as inconsistent and requiring significant improvement in many areas, according to Harvard Business. Along with that, only 6% say that they are very satisfied with the level of investment in their leadership development program, according to a Borderless 2016 survey. And then you wrap all that in the fact that U.S. companies alone spend $14 billion annually on leadership development, according to McKinsey. So when you think about all of that, when you put that all together, there is a potential to be a significant gap when we talk about 10,000 baby boomers retiring every single day, and when we look at Generation X, we're twice the size they are. I mean, in sheer numbers, we are twice the size of Generation X. So when you think about it, who's going to be taking those leadership positions? Who's going to be taking those C-suite, those upper-level management positions? It's us. It's Generation Y that are going to be asked to lead the future. And it's not in the future. That future is right now. So my motivation for this project is everybody that's listening, everybody in the strike group. And if I can bring to life, if I can capture these stories of people like you, James, these young, influential, and powerful leaders, and bring to light the tools that we need to be great leaders for the future, which is now, then I have done what I have set out to do.
That's awesome. You're doing a fantastic job there.
Thanks, my man. Well, with that said, are you motivated to get into the rapid fire round?
Let's go.
What motivates you to get out of bed every single morning?
I'm so lucky to be able to work for a cause that I strongly believe in and that is having a positive impact on the world. I work with such inspiring people doing amazing things all over the world and taking initiative to develop renewable energy in their own countries. From Mongolia to Jamaica, there are local entrepreneurs that are really doing great things and showing that renewable energy can be the future of energy generation. So I get out of bed every morning doing something I really love. It's really not hard. And if anything, I have to make sure I don't spend too much time doing this work because it's just so inspiring.
As a leader, what questions have you been asking yourself recently?
So the stage of our organization right now is that I don't know where I'll be or what I'll be doing next week. So I don't have much room for long-term planning. Hopefully that's going to level out soon as we continue to build the organization. But a really interesting area, kind of not just for this organization, but for my future, is a question of nonprofit versus for-profit. Where do I see myself working? I love the nonprofit sector. I think it's great to be able to work on things with a cause, but you can also work on a cause in the for-profit sector. And I need to get some more experience in both sectors, I think. I want to see where I can have the most impact, but also where I can create a stable environment for myself. And right now, I'm not sure whether the future is nonprofit, for-profit, or a mixture of those two.
Awesome. Tell me about a piece of technology, software, or an application that you just can't live without.
One of them is followupthen.com. You can BCC in your email Monday at followupthen.com, and your email returns on Monday. And little things like that make a huge difference in your organization, and I'm always looking out for new tools like that. The other one is TextNow. It's an app which gives you a free US phone number for texting and travel. And unfortunately, I found this out just after I wasted $50 paying for unnecessary Skype number. But given the amount of travel that I do, having an app which has an actual number in the US is really helpful.
What is the last book that you read, and why should we read it?
So I've been trying to read more novels instead of just nonfiction, but I'm still on nonfiction right now. I'm actually reading a really interesting book called Scars of Partition, which talks a lot about British colonial history. And I'm trying to learn more about this because it's something in the UK that we're really not taught about in schools. I think just like in America, we often avoid talking about the darker parts of our history. And so I want to know more about how colonialism shaped the world, and this book's been really interesting for that. Because obviously, a lot of the countries I'm working in the Caribbean, they are direct products of British colonialism. And so it's important to understand that history when I'm going about the work I'm doing.
What is the greatest challenge facing Generation Y today?
I think there's a big pressure to avoid taking risks, to follow a specific path, work for a specific type of company. And it's just an outdated mindset to me, but the pressure is still there. I think inherent in that is that our lifestyles and legal structures aren't moving quickly enough to keep up with changing technology and changing reality. And we need to be able to, Generation Y need to be able to take more risks because we need to adapt even more quickly than previous generations.
Hey, very well said. Now I want you to be profound, James. I want you to quote yourself.
So given the work that I've been doing internationally, I like the idea that everyone is a global citizen now, that we need to think globally, that the world is getting smaller, and if you want to succeed, in any country, you need to know about the rest of the world and understand how people around the world think in terms of your organization.
Hey, great stuff there. Well, James, it was an honor to strike with you today. Please tell the Strike Group the best way to get in touch with you, and then I'll hit the film room and break down our conversation.
Thanks so much for having me. So you can follow me on Twitter, Jay Ellsmore, or you can email me, jellsmore@solarheadofstate.org.
James, the best of luck to you guys over there at Solar Head of State as you move into Jamaica later this month. We wish you well moving forward, not just later this month, but of course in the coming years. Take great care. We'll chat soon.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now let's move into the film room. After every show, I fire up the tape and break down the conversation to uncover the key takeaways so you can attack your life with purpose. James, at the age of 24, has a profound perspective of leadership, understanding that the success of the organization comes from the grassroots up. He leads a mixture of for-profit companies, nonprofit companies, and governments, and he must work across party lines to coordinate his efforts. Leaders must ensure that organizations working towards the same goal are supporting one another. Even if these teams are inside the same organization, they can inherit a different style as workloads, hours, and team members vary. Teams can naturally produce a competitive spirit that flows through the organization, which is not a bad thing. However, if they forsake the principle of teamwork and operate independently or against one another, the results can be catastrophic. Lastly, James has never been shy. In fact, he's had a ton of courage about asking for advice or reaching out to his personal mentors. Strike Group, you would be amazed of how many people are willing to help you. Create your network by sharing space and time with people you know will be able to help you achieve your desired aspirations. In my world, I coach high school lacrosse. Naturally, I am close with the parents of the young men that play for me. Because we share a common interest, which is developing their children into respectable young men, we have been able to forge solid relationships that have given me opportunities to leverage their experience and their personal networks. So what can you do to enhance your network? Think critically. How can you construct a solid network of people to whom you can offer time and value while expecting nothing in return? Trust me, once you do that, they will let you pick the fruit from their tree later on down the line. I am Tim Paul. Built for us and by us, LSG is the only 5-day-a-week leadership podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Subscribe now, and these podcasts will snuggle gently into your music player of choice. Kick over to leadershipstrikegroup.com for more in-depth coaching. I'm also getting nice on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn, so head over there and give me a shout. Strike Group. Stay on top, stay proud. It is all up to you now.